It's Tuesday, May 24th. Welcome to Market Foolery. I'm Mark Reith, and joining me in studio today from Supernova, David Kretzmann, and from Hidden Gems, Seth Jason. Gentlemen, how's it going?
Hey,
pretty
hey.
Good.
This is new and exciting. I don't think I've ever been in the studio with you, Seth, before, and I certainly haven't been in here with the two of you before. This is great.
I've never had this much cold medicine before work, so anything can happen.
So this is going to be a great show. It's going to go so smoothly.
What happened to make this happen? I don't know.
A lot of people canceled on me. We've got plenty to talk about today, including news from GoPro and earnings from Best Buy. You know what? In fact, let's start with GoPro. And David, I'd love your reaction on the GoPro news that they are now equity partners with Red Bull, which kind of makes some sense in my mind, at least. The two kind of go hand in hand. Those Red Bull commercials, you see them all the time with the crazy stunts and the jumping off the buildings and the what have yous. And more often than not, they're probably wearing GoPros to film those videos. It seems like this is a no-brainer. What's your take on this?
Yeah, this is a pretty natural partnership. Red Bull is actually kind of an inspiration for Nick Woodman, founder and CEO of GoPro, when he was trying to create kind of a lifestyle brand with GoPro. So Red Bull was an inspiration for GoPro early on as they were building that company. Like you said, the companies have been working together in different ways for a long time. Red Bull does a lot of, you know, the action stunts, different extreme sports. So a lot of their athletes wear GoPros anyway. Mm-hmm. So with this deal, it's essentially a multi-year partnership between the two brands. Red Bull will now have a stake, an equity stake in GoPro. Red Bull has a lot of events internationally. In the press release, they mentioned they have 1,800 events across more than 100 countries. The content that they capture with GoPro, which is now the exclusive kind of point of view video capture for Red Bull, that content will be distributed across both companies' digital distribution platforms. So I think this makes sense for both companies. It's certainly probably one of the few bright spots we've seen with GoPro in about a year.
As a GoPro shareholder, long-suffering,
is there any
moolah involved? Is this just equity for helping out, or is this, here's some moolah, you get some equity in?
No moolah.
GoPro is Red Bull is now an equity partner in GoPro. They get less than 1% of the tech company's Class A shares.
Not that much. It's a good hookup, though, because they can, you know, they can cross-pollinate in the extreme areas, you know?
The extremities, absolutely. And Red Bull, to David, to your point, you know, they've been an inspiration for GoPro over the years, and Red Bull has just been trying to expand, I think, a lot. You know, obviously, it's a beverage maker. That's the core company here. But they've also got a lot of properties outside of that. The New York Red Bulls is a pro soccer team franchise. They have a Formula One racing team. They've got all this extreme sports programming. Now GoPro gets to videotape it all. It makes a lot of sense for GoPro, and it makes a lot of sense for Red Bull to get, you know, access to all the GoPro tech early on, which I thought was a pretty cool deal that Red Bull gets a first look at any products GoPro creates in the future.
And they are pushing out a little bit more professional level stuff,
exactly,
right? Some of the 360-degree camera arrays and all of that. So
right.
Yeah, all in all, I see this as, you know, it's a brand building opportunity for GoPro. It's not going to directly contribute, you know, to revenue, which, you know, might be a bummer today. But long term, I think this certainly pushes their media efforts in the right direction. Ideally, GoPro can become more of a media company, whether they make revenue from it directly or, you know, they're producing more professional content, as Seth said. But for now, the company is still dependent on the sale of their cameras to generate sales, which up to this point, you know, over the past 6 to 9 months has been, you know, an unfortunate reality for the company. But partnerships like this, I think, moves the company in a direction where it puts them on a more sustainable path for the long term. So all in all, good news for GoPro.
Seth, you came in here cold. You insisted that you not hear this news.
I didn't scream, did I?
You didn't. So is this a good thing for you as a GoPro shareholder?
I don't know if there's anything that's good enough for me right now as a GoPro shareholder. Except get that drone camera out there already so people can have the next shiny thing to spend their money on. Yeah. I want people screaming, take my money. Shut up and take my money and buying GoPro.
And they delayed the drone till the holiday season this year. So we'll see if the drone... Yeah,
it better be awesome because it's about 4 years late to market.
Right.
Woof. Yeah. Okay, let's move on to Best Buy, which announced first quarter earnings earlier. On this quarter, you know, Best Buy seemed to do pretty darn well, David, including a 77% increase in the company's first quarter net income. But the shares are still down a bit today. Tell me a bit about the market's reaction to Best Buy.
Yeah, all in all, I don't know if there's a whole lot to be excited about.
I'm sorry that we're not filming this so that people can see that shrug.
The visual went.
I'm trying to give Best Buy some love. Really, the only bright spot I see is their online sales domestically increased 24%, but that still only makes up about 10% of sales for the company. So, you know, their sales are still pretty sluggish. Their domestic comps were down slightly, flatter down. International revenue was down 8%. So this is a company, they're still dependent on their retail locations. Those locations aren't performing very well. They're trying to boost that online business, but that's not performing well, and they're still underperforming Amazon in terms of sales growth. Amazon, in the most recent quarter, they grew sales 28%. So that growth is outpacing Best Buy's online growth.
Just a hint.
Very tough to compete with that gorilla, Amazon. Yeah. It's just... They're whomping everybody.
Yeah. That's one way of putting it. Seth, when was the last time you stepped foot in a Best Buy?
Oof, I can guarantee it was a disappointing experience. It's been years. I drive by one all the time near my house where I go get groceries. And every once in a while I think, I'm going to go in there and look at stuff. And then I remember and I go, I'll go home and get on the computer and look at stuff.
Well, that's the thing with Best Buy. You go in and look at stuff, but that doesn't mean you're going to buy something in there. You know, it's a showroom. You look at the stuff there, then you buy it online, usually not at Best Buy, but at Amazon. That's been my history.
It is a rough business. It's a rough business.
Not easy to be a big box retailer these days. And it's also not really that easy to be in the restaurant industry these days. You know, we talk about how the retailers have suffered over the last couple of quarters, but it's time we take a look at the restaurant industry. Both of you seem to have a lot to say about restaurants when we were talking about this show earlier today. So let's just dive on in. Let's start with something that has been very surprising to me. It's the sudden decline in the fortunes of, for instance, Chipotle, and the sudden resurgence of McDonald's, which to me seems like an incredible turnaround from the last couple of years, where you see these fast food companies just bottoming out as people insist on healthier and healthier fare. And now
we need finger quotes around healthier.
Okay, that's
like
a fair point.
2,000 calorie meal at Chipotle is healthier.
Sure, but it surprises me to see that whenever we talk about earnings these last couple of months, that's been the story. And Seth, I'd love your take on that. What's going on here?
Well, it's pretty complex, and I think it's easy to be misled by the headlines. I've been, you know, sort of absorbing these over the past few weeks myself. So Chipotle is very simple. If you poison a bunch of people by accident in several different incidents, people are going to stop going to your restaurants. And
sure.
So that's responsible for a huge, huge sales drop for them. But even somebody like Buffalo Wild Wings, which has done well for a while, had a slightly negative comps this quarter. And only 15% revenue growth by expanding locations. But they are not the only fast casuals that were not doing so well. Bravo Rio and Applebee's are a couple more that reported same-store sales drops. And a lot of the stories said, well, everyone has traded down to fast food. Everyone's running out of money. Except in early May, I think it was the 11th, Wendy's scared the market when they said, we're not so sure about sales. And so everyone ran away from the fast food shares. So one of the points I wanted to make is that if you look at for a trend through the lenses of several of the companies you follow, it can seem pretty grim and you might be missing, you know, what's actually going on in the forest for the trees. So in order to get a broader look, I like to look at other aspects of the restaurant business. And one good place to look is suppliers. So you could start with a giant supplier like Sysco, and you can see that the overall sales trends for them have been they've been mixed. I mean, the national restaurant data that they follow shows that it's a little choppy, but up slightly. And even with that, Sysco's case growth for the quarter that ended in May, at the beginning of May, or the quarter that they reported in the beginning of May, was up about 3.5%. So they were still, you know, I'm not talking about dollars, I'm talking about volume, still moving more product. And we've got a smaller player in Hidden Gems, a specialty supplier called Chef's Warehouse, and their case growth was up 7.5%. And so this suggests to me that we might be looking at a kind of a bifurcated market. So the lower end seems to be struggling. The middle seems to be struggling. Chef's Warehouse serves specialty restaurants and then places like country clubs, higher end chef-driven places. And if you judge by what those places are buying, more cases of stuff, the business can't be all that bad, I don't think. At least not across the board.
Well, I guess my question there is, who's buying at those high end? Is it the baby boomers? Because I know millennials are,
1%
are driving.
Maybe.
Well, I guess so. I mean, well, that's my question. You know, and the millennials, they've driven Chipotle to the point where it is now, and now they're turning towards the convenience and the cheapness of fast food once again. Yeah. Whereas, at least at the high end, according to you, it's still doing just fine. Is that the baby boomers up there? Who's buying?
I would say it's just tough to say. I mean, when I see the difference between what a lot of restaurants are reporting and what their suppliers are reporting. That doesn't suggest to me that maybe the supplier information is necessarily better. Hmm. It's that maybe it's more mixed, and that I'm not getting the whole picture by what I'm reading in these headlines. And that's actually one of the scary things about investing. You can talk yourself into an opinion on an industry or on some stocks without actually realizing you're doing it. So you got to be aware when you're reading those articles.
Yeah, you don't want to extrapolate too much from one quarter. You know. Consumer preferences can change pretty quickly, you know, so maybe casual diners for the most part in the first quarter, they struggled the most out of the restaurant category. Maybe that picks up later this year as those casual diners like Applebee's, Chili's, Ruby Tuesday, Red Robin, you know, they'll take steps to try to bring those guest counts back up. But one case I thought that was interesting with Buffalo Wild Wings, which Seth mentioned, went on the first quarter conference call. The word value appeared 21 times in the conference call. So they were talking about how consumers are more value-driven all of a sudden. And it sort of hit them out of nowhere. Like they reduced their guidance for the rest of the year based on the results they reported. So 21 times the word value appeared in the first quarter. In the fourth quarter, it appeared just 10 times. And in the first quarter last year, it only appeared twice. So it shows you maybe, you know, some... Maybe an interesting glimpse in the case of Buffalo Wild Wings as far as consumer trends. In general, when I look at individual restaurants, I'm most attracted to the companies that are able to be nimble and offer things like takeout, online ordering, which Buffalo Wild Wings is doing, Red Robin is doing. Chipotle and Starbucks obviously have a pretty a growing presence with digital ordering, things like that. Mm-hmm. So that's what I tend to look at on an individual case. So companies that are embracing technology can be more flexible across, you know, the inevitable ebbs and flows that come in the restaurant business.
Sure, yeah. It makes sense.
As for demand, I think that I saw this in retail too, and I have a hypothesis, which is that when you've got an election campaign going on, mm-hmm. where it's in everyone's interest who's running for office to tell you how terrible things are, people start to believe it,
makes sense.
Start to pull back.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think that's a surprising thing is. Restaurant same-store sales as a whole were pretty weak. They're up 1.3% on average in the first quarter compared to a 4.8% increase in the first quarter last year. But unemployment, you know, is pretty low, around 5%.
Like wages are up a little bit. So there's a disconnect.
Yeah, so we're not worse off than we were a year ago, by and large, for most people. So I think that's the surprising thing. So maybe the election is playing into that.
So how do companies bridge that disconnect? If you're Chipotle, is now the time, for instance, like you said, to build those digital outlets? Is now the time to double down on the pizzeria and the what's the Asian
shop house?
Is now the time to speed those up and?
They're trying to juggle making sure they don't poison anybody, and that takes some pretty big changes, actually.
You seem fixated on that.
As a Chipotle shareholder and someone who doesn't enjoy spending time in the bathroom any more than I have to, I'm pretty concerned with that. And
this is the best show we've ever had. This is great.
But it takes a lot because they like to talk about how they had great standards, and mm-hmm. now they're going to have the best standards in the world. But when the whole thing happened, I took a look, and it looked to me like their standards were a little bit lax. They, you know, they were angry. I remember early on, they were angry that the government couldn't figure out where, you know, the source of the Salmonella outbreak at one point. And they were ticked off about that. And I thought, no, it's your job to know what thing you served people was bad. The government will try to figure it out later, but you should know. And so they're taking a lot of steps like having their suppliers more carefully vetted by being able to follow products from place to place by blanching things that could possibly be contaminated to, you know, kill any bacteria that might be on them, and by having certain things, more things prepared at what they call commissaries, but really they're just commercial kitchens that pre-cook and pre-chop things. And Chipotle has always used these. They've just used the higher end ones that tend to serve cruise ships and others. That's a secret they don't want people to really know, but it actually is the way it is. But they have to do that. So right now they're trying to bring people back in by telling them what they're doing to keep the food safe. And once they've got that figured out, then they'll try and figure out how to grow things.
What an election year sort of way of looking at things. So negative, Seth. Let's look at the positives. Okay, who out there, with all this said in the restaurant industry, David, who are you looking at as a great investment right now? Restaurant, company, who do you like?
Taking kind of a contrarian stance here, like I don't think casual dining restaurants are going to disappear or anything. Red Robin is actually a company I think should
Red
get
Robin.
A little more attention. And I brought this up at Fool Fest last week, our member event. We had a presentation, Simon Erickson, Matt Argersinger, and me, and Red Robin was kind of the stock I pitched at the end, and no one in the crowd voted for Red Robin as the stock they liked the most. So that stung a little bit. But
have you seen how Red Robin's been doing? This is a contrarian play.
I should probably visit the restaurants. But I for me, it really comes down to the leadership. So obviously with someone like Sally Smith at Buffalo Wild Wings, when you have confidence in a leadership team, they can be more nimble and flexible build that brand over time. Red Robin has actually been doing pretty well over the past few years. They've struggled the past couple quarters with dropping guest counts. Mm-hmm. But the CEO, Stephen Carley, who took over in 2010, he's done a lot to rebuild the brand. They're finishing up remodeling all of their restaurants this year. They installed tabletop tablets at each of their restaurants, so similar thing that Buffalo Wild Wings has done. So when you sit down at your table, you can order from the tablet, you can play games and pay and spend extra money that way. They're embracing technology more than a lot of other casual dining chains. So I think they were hit more than 20% last week after weak results. But I think with the strategic plan that they have, the focus on embracing technology, I think they'll pull out ahead when all is said and done. It might be a rough year for them and others like Buffalo Wild Wings, but looking out 3 to 5 years, I think they'll be okay.
I think you got to bet on Be Wild. They're like beer and wings and sports, and they know how to keep bringing the people back.
America.
Yeah, America.
Seth, is your pick Be Wild?
If you have to look at stuff among those we've talked today, yeah, I think Buffalo Wild Wings is going to be back. And people will be back to Chipotle eventually, too. They want to like Chipotle because they want to believe all the nice things about the pigs being petted before they go to sleep and before they're made into burritos.
So sure.
People want to believe all that.
Something to watch with Chipotle, too. In November, the news of them hiring the chief digital officer from Starbucks, mm-hmm. the guy who created Starbucks' loyalty program and digital program. He headed up that program at Starbucks for 18 years. Forget his name. But he's now the first chief digital officer at Chipotle. So we've seen the company offering, buy one, get one free, burritos and stuff like that. So I think through this year and over the next 3 years or so, we should really be watching for Chipotle to, launch some sort of stronger digital presence and a customer loyalty program. They've started to do that now, and I hope they keep doing more there because I think there's a big opportunity for them to start to rival Starbucks when it comes to that mobile and digital strategy.
And in the last call, they let slip that one of the biggest drops they've had in their sales has been the folks who come to Chipotle like 3, 4, 5 times a week.
Yeah, the most loyal customers. Yeah. And those are the ones you need to get back.
Well, then my question for you both is, what's your guilty pleasure? Are you going to Chipotle 3, 4, 5 times a week? Seth, I know you run a lot. You're a big marathon runner. What's the fuel for you? What do you splurge on afterwards?
Told my wife to quit buying them when she goes to Trader Joe's because I can't stand I cannot stand up to them. The Trader Joe's pound and a half milk chocolate with almond bars. Like, I'll just eat.
Pound and a half?
Yeah.
You're a twig, man.
Yeah,
my God.
I'll eat 1,000 calories worth of that in 2 minutes.
Okay.
Impressive.
David, can you beat that?
I go with the burrito bowl at Chipotle.
Sure.
I get that 2 or 3 times a week. I'm still a loyal customer.
Two or three times a week.
Man,
all right.
Can't get enough of that.
Seth, Jason, David Kretzmann. Guys, thanks for being here.
Thanks, Mark.
You're welcome.
As always, people on the program may have interest in the stocks they talk about, and The Motley Fool may have formal recommendations for or against. So don't buy or sell stocks based solely on what you hear. That's it for this edition of Market Foolery. The show is mixed by Dan Boyd. I'm Mark Reith. Thanks for listening. We'll see you tomorrow.